On this week's Adam Schefter podcast, as we get ready for Week 15 matchups, we sit down and talk with the former Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera, who lost his job 1 week ago, but who we suspect won't be unemployed very long. And we'll be joined by the Seahawks offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, whose team and offense is getting ready to battle Ron Rivera's former Carolina Panthers team in Carolina this weekend. And we'll get a preview of the Week 15 matchups from the ESPN analytics guru, Evan Kaplan. But first, Ron Rivera. Joining us now, the former 2013 and 2015 Coach of the Year, a man who led the Carolina Panthers to three straight division titles from 2013 through 2015, helping Carolina reach the Super Bowl in the 2015 season. Ron Rivera. Ron, thank you very much for the time today.
Appreciate it, Adam. Good to be here.
Well, listen, it was about this time last week where we were sitting down to tape this podcast, and as I'm about to begin the podcast, got a text message that Carolina had made the decision to relieve you of your duty. So take me through what happened. How did this happen on that day at that time, and what you will always remember about that?
Well, the biggest thing I remember is that, you know, Mr. Tepper came in and we sat down and talked, and you know, just in terms of his discussion and talking about the direction he wanted ahead and, you know, where we were. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, having him explain things and we talked about things, I could see his reasoning behind it. It did lessen the blow. You know, the initial, you know, kind of really kind of, you know, going through my mind, and then the realization, you know what, his reasoning is sound. The fact that he wanted to eliminate the pressure of having to sit through the, you know, the weekly, oh, you know, you're on the hot seat, how do you feel about that, that type of thing, really seemed to be, you know, fair. So I really did appreciate, you know, the way it was presented to me and that type of stuff.
Were you expecting anything at all on that day when you went to work?
No, because we had just finished the morning game planning session for the base defense.
Wow.
And we were actually on lunch break when he came by.
So you're on lunch break, he comes by, he comes to your office, or he calls for you to come down to his office?
No, he came to my office. He had texted me earlier and said, hey, you know, love to get together, and I thought, you know, I'd like to get together with you. And I said, okay, cool, you know. And for the most part, Tuesdays was his days in the office at the stadium. You know, he'd come in and spend a day and go through all the business of the team. So, you know, I just kind of figured, you know, here we go with, you know, our regular conversation on Tuesday.
So you clean out your office that day. You head home, correct?
Yeah.
What was that like, cleaning out your office?
Well, I'll tell you right now, it's not the first time I've ever had to clean an office out. Just, okay. You know, I mean, it's the nature of the business. And that's probably the other part, too, that I really understood. I mean, you know, I know what the goal is in the NFL. It's a production-based business. You know,
yeah.
If you don't produce, eventually you're going to get replaced. And, you know, the thing that, you know, made the most sense to me was when we talked was that, you know, he wanted to give some younger coaches opportunities. I mean, it's a very difficult situation everybody's in. But, you know, it gives guys a little recognition, a little opportunity, kind of see what it feels like going forward. And, you know, because he has a plan, you know, whatever that plan is. But he has a plan. And so I respected that. You know, I respected the fact that he came to me. I respected the fact that he told me, you know, what his ideas and thoughts are going forward. And he was great. He really was. He was terrific about it.
So what was the first weekend without football like for you this past weekend?
It truly was without football. I mean, we have some really great friends that we've made, you know, while we've been here in Charlotte, and a few of them reached out. And so we actually had a barbecue we went to. We had played golf on Sunday. You know, I had kind of a funny start to my Sunday, though. I woke up at 7, and my first thought was, oh, I got to get to the bus. And then the realization that, no, I don't have to get to the bus. So that was it. And then as I settled in and things kind of, you know, went on and went forward, you know, I kind of focused a little bit more on the people that I was with, you know, with Stephanie and our family friends. And it was awesome. It was definitely different. Something I've never done in 33 years of football, but they helped me get through the day.
Yeah, what's it like to be a civilian on a Sunday? Because I know that when the season ends, it's always a very strange thing. That first Sunday when you're home after the Super Bowl, and I've been tied up on Sundays for 20-plus weeks, and you're home on a Sunday, and it just feels, in a way, it feels odd and weird, but it feels glorious, too, like you get to be a person.
Well, you know, it's funny that he used the phrase civilian because, you know, growing up in a military family, you know, you always kind of knew how things were one way. You know, it was always that way. And then, you know, now having to step away from it and you are a civilian. You're no longer, you know, connected to it right now. You know, that was a little odd. That was a little different for me.
So what will these next few weeks be like? Because I would assume that you're going to be a hot name on the coaching circuit. You're going to get interviews. Do you spend time decompressing? Do you spend time prepping for interviews? What will it be like for you the next couple of weeks, Ron?
It's been a little bit of both, Adam. You know, in talking with my agent, you know, we've started putting together, you know, my introductory book as a head coach. You know, and really the book is a little bit about my philosophy, a little bit about who I am, a little bit about my plans going forward, how I want to do things. And then as we, you know, hopefully get some interview opportunities, we'll tailor the book to that team. You know, you look at and obviously listen to what people are saying and you're going, okay, I see that team. I understand that team. Okay, I get it. Okay. You know, it doesn't make it right, you know, because I feel bad about it. But at the same time, you know, it is business and this is what we signed up for. We're signed up for a production-based business. And you have to be successful to stay in this business.
If I were to read that introductory book of Ron Rivera today, what would I walk away with? What would be my takeaway?
That I just don't want to build a football team. I want to build a character, a culture, and I want to build a sustaining culture. I mean, you know, we were able to do it here for 9 years. Obviously, I would have loved it end on a much higher note. But that's what the premise is it's going to be about, is that, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to try and build something to sustain a period of time, and we're going to try and build a winning culture.
And you spent all these years in coaching. You got into coaching with the Bears in 1997. How much smarter and more experienced do you feel you are now compared to when you got into coaching in 97?
I'm much smarter. You know, it's funny. You always sit there and say, God, if I knew what I know now, you know, I would like to hope and believe I'm not going to make those mistakes that I made early on. I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is my first couple of years in the league, I struggled. I made mistakes, you know. And then finally what happened was my third year, Mr. Richardson, you know, Jerry Richardson, the former owner, put me in contact with John Madden. And we sat down and we talked. And he was a tremendous mentor who really helped me through a tough period in my career. And I'll say this, and hopefully to all the young coaches that are listening, when you finally get your chance, make sure you have a voice of reason, a voice of experience on your coaching staff, a guy that's been there, you know, that was a former head coach. One of my favorite sayings in life is, don't draw me a map unless you've been there. And nobody can sit there and tell you, hey, dude, that's wrong. Hey, dude, you screwed that up. Hey, dude, think about this. I didn't have that guy my first 2 years, and that was my mistake. So, you know, Mr. Richardson put me in touch with John Madden, and Coach Madden was tremendous. I mean, I'll tell you right now, you know, he should write a book about you know, how to mentor people, because what he did for me and how he helped me was just tremendous. It was outstanding, and I'm so fortunate to have been able to have time with him to help further my career. It's an amazing thing.
What was your biggest takeaway from spending time with Coach Madden?
You know, one of the things I used to, you know, I'll tell you a great little story. So I'm getting ready to go visit him in February, I believe it was. It was either in February or beginning of March.
Yep.
And I get this little note. Hey, take a look. Oh, see, I had this dubious decision having a, I think it was a 3-13 record of games decided by 6 points or less. And so I got this dubious, I got this little note saying, hey, take a look at those 13 games that you lost by 6 points or less. And just write down, think about what you could have done differently. What could you have done better? So I go to it. I pull those 13 games up. I look them up. I write them up. You know, I write up the last. You know, he said, right at the last 4 minutes of each game, what could you have done differently? So I write at the last 4 minutes of those 13 games. So I fly out to see Coach. I walk into his office. We sit down. We, you know, have some cordials and talking hello, you know, and just it was great. And then I said, oh, hey, I have that homework assignment you gave me. So I pull it out and I hand it to him. He looks and goes, this is not for me. This is for you. What did you learn? And I said, well, I learned that, you know, I could have made some different decisions, but I pretty much stuck to the book. He goes, what do you mean you stuck to the book? Well, you know, I punted when I think I should have punted. I kicked the field goal when I thought I should have kicked the field goal. You know, I might have gone for this on fourth down, or I might have gone for that on fourth down, but, you know, I did this and I did that. You know, I played this coverage. when I think we could have played something different? He goes, well, why'd you do it? He said, well, I was just following the book. He said, Ron, he looked at me dead square and looked at me and said, Ron, what book? There's no book on how you're supposed to do things. Okay, there's no book that should tell you what you should and shouldn't do. Okay, football is a game of instinct. Football is a game of experience. Okay, you've played enough football, you've coached enough football to go with your gut, to go with your instincts, to go with what you believe and what you know. And hence, that's how quote unquote Riverboat Ron was born.
So Riverboat Ron was a manifestation from Coach John Madden?
Yes. Because what happened after that, we got into a couple of fourth down situations that I went for in the 2013 season, and we converted.
Yeah.
And there was one game in particular that I went for it on fourth down in our first drive twice in our opening drive, and we scored, and we ended up smoking the team we played that day.
Huh.
And cool. I'm telling you, it's just one of those. If you go back and look it up, you know, it's us against Minnesota in 2013, and we scored on that opening drive, and from that point on, everything has just been, you know, just manifested itself into taking a look at situations, you know, going with the what I felt the momentum was, sticking to that gut feeling, and not wavering. And that's kind of how I've coached from that point on. It's kind of analytics before analytics.
Pretty amazing. And so if you were to get a new job right now, Ron, who would be, would John Madden be the guy? Who would be your trusted advisor that you turn to again?
He'd be the first guy I call. If, you know, hopefully if and when that happens, I most certainly will call him. I'm telling you, the man's just been terrific. And if you're looking for people to help you, find people that have been there, that have had success being there. And just listen to them tell you, you know, what they've gone through and what they did. You know, and I love the fact that, you know, Coach Madden told me, he said, Ron, I don't always have the right answer. He says, but I have an answer.
So you picked up a lot from Coach Madden. And your father served 32 years in the Army with your family living in Germany, Panama, Washington, Maryland, California when you were a kid. What did you learn from your dad as well?
Well, we learned that there's a chain of command. You have to have tremendous respect for that chain of command, you know, and as you go forward, you know, if you're the leader, you know, everybody's going to turn and look to you. And no matter how hard things get nor how good things go, you have to be that same guy. You know, it's funny because I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, Coach doesn't show a lot of emotion. He's always stoic. Well, that's because I got to be steady. And the best lesson I learned was in the 2013 playoffs when we lost to San Francisco at home. I thought we were getting jobbed by the referees. I was pissed. I mean, I really went at the referees, and I lost my composure. And my players fed off of that. They lost their composure. They started yelling at the referees. They started questioning everything, and they lost their focus. And from that point on, I told myself, you have to be in control of your emotions. I mean, that's what I learned from my father, is that there's a chain of command, a chain of respect. And that if you are the leader, everybody's looking at you. Everybody's turning to you when things get tough. Things are going rough, man. They're going to expect you to be that same guy. And so that's one of the things I try to do, is be that same guy.
And you could see how the players adopted your attitude and your stance on that day?
Absolutely, because I could see guys that were usually in control of themselves, too, and their emotions, you know, really losing it. And it's funny because kudos to the 49er players, the way they handled themselves. Yeah. They just stayed steady, and they fed off the fact that, you know, our guys had a negative energy, and that was, again, on me. That was my fault.
Ron, after David Tepper made the decision to move on from you last week, there were a number of heartfelt tributes posted on social media from many of your former players. Was there one in particular that meant more to you than the others that resonated with you?
Wow. I mean, they all resonate. They really do, because when guys sit there and tell you about, you know, about what they're doing now, or that, hey, you made this kind of an impact, that's really what I think coaching and teaching is all about, is that you want to be able to make sure you've made a positive impact. One of my favorites, though, was Jonathan Stewart. He said one of the things that he remembers, one of the really neat things, cool things that I did, was when he told me they were having a baby girl, how excited I was for him. And I really, truly do mean that. I mean, I think it's exciting that the players, you know, that now, hey, they're going to get to experience parenthood and become fathers, and, you know, just how important it is that they are there for their kids, you know. And it's been really neat to watch these guys as they've transitioned into being not just young men, not just football players, but parents.
Well, am I wrong to assume that in a way, and I don't mean to question the maturity level, but you have 53 kids whenever you're coaching a team, correct? That you're kind of looking after. They're like your children to a certain extent, right?
They really are. I mean, I feel responsible for a lot of those young men. And I just think that, you know, I have to be the best example. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I've always tried to do. And I told this story too, you know, when people were asking about it. You know, I've had some people that say, oh, wow, you know, your wife and daughter spend a lot of time around the facility. And I do that on purpose because, you know, other than the fact I love them dearly, but yeah. I want our players to see me interacting with my wife. I want them to see me, you know, parenting my child. Even though my daughter's in her 20s, you know, I want them to see that because I think it's important that these guys understand that, you know, you have to have balance between your careers and your lives.
I want to ask you about a couple of your former players. What does the Sure. future hold for Cam Newton in your mind?
Well, hopefully, you know, he heals up properly, and he's ready to roll. And I'll just, you know, for me personally, I don't know, but I will say this. I would never bet against Cam Newton just because of who he is as a football player and as a competitor. You know, that's one of his strongest assets is that he is a very competitive guy.
How about Christian McCaffrey? What most impressed you about him?
His work ethic and his desire. I mean, he's the right kind of young man in terms of he understands, he gets it, he knows what needs to be done, and he does things the right way all the time. He's never satisfied. He wants to be great, not just good, but he wants to be great, and he works that way. That's what's impressive. And you know, and you could say it's all, you know, it's all about upbringing with that young man because, you know, both his parents played sports collegiately. His mom was an All-American. His dad played in the NFL for 12, 13 years. And they really passed down that work ethic. And it's been something that is really cool to watch.
You know, that makes me feel old, too, because I'll tell you this, Ron. When I used to cover the Denver Broncos back for the Rocky Mountain News and Denver Post, Christian McCaffrey would come to training camp. He was up to my knee. I mean, he was there.
Yep,
we had Kyle Shanahan as a bull boy, Christian McCaffrey running around the fields like a little boy on the loose. And now these guys are doing what they're doing today, and it makes me feel old, I got to tell you.
I was going to make a joke about Christian and say, well, he doesn't go much further past your knee. But
well, I don't go much further either, so that's the way it kind of goes. I can't make fun of that. So altogether, you coached 9 seasons with the Carolina Panthers. When you look back at it now, Ron, what will be the fondest memory of your time with Carolina?
Wow, the players, just the joy and the excitement we have. You know, during my tenure, you know, I know there were some tough moments, hard moments, but just the fact that, you know, things were competitive, the guys worked hard. You know, there's a lot of great individual stories. You know, one of my favorite is the return of Thomas Davis, you know, from his third knee surgery. You know, that's probably one of my all time favorites. Being there when he won the NFL's Man of the Year award, that was a spectacular night for him, and I couldn't have been more pleased. You know, just, you know, being around Cam Newton and be able to talk to him man to man about things and other than football. I mean, I've had some great conversations with him that were just tremendous. So, you know, I've been very fortunate. So there'll be a lot of fond memories.
And as we look ahead to the couple of weeks ahead here, the few weeks ahead, if I could draw up an ideal situation for you, if such a thing even exists, what would that look like for you, Ron?
To me, it would be an opportunity to coach a team that has the potential to win. You know, I mean, there's a lot of reclamation programs that'll probably be in play there. You know, but there'll also be some teams I think that they're, you know, they're a good draft away, a couple of good free agents away from being a really, really good team. That's what I want because when I come back, you know, I want to come back to win. I'm not taking a job to take a job. I'm taking a job because I believe we have a chance to win football games, and that's what I want.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate the time today. We look forward to getting you back in the league. I'm sure it won't be long. Thank you very much for the time today, and good luck to you going forward.
I appreciate that, Adam. Always good to talk to you, man.
There's former Panthers head coach Ron Rivera. We'll have more with Seahawks offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer in a moment, but first a word from Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can attend the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. That's promo code ESPN25. Joining us now, the offensive coordinator of the 10-3 Seattle Seahawks, a man that is in charge of the fifth-rated offense in the league, Brian Schottenheimer. Brian, thanks for the time today in advance.
Well, my pleasure, Adam. Always great to talk to you.
How do we feel about going into Carolina on Sunday, Brian?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're into our prep a little bit now. I'll tell you what, they're a good team. They're really obviously doing a great job rushing the passer. I think they lead the league in sacks. They got 50, I think, on the year, and excellent front seven. They're playing really hard. So it'll be a good challenge for us, like each and every week when you go up against certain teams. It's just it's like they reload every week. So it'll be a good challenge for us going there on the long road trip.
I mentioned the fifth-rated offense in Seattle that you're in charge of. What, in your mind, has gone right this year for your offense?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, Adam. I think, obviously, you know, everything with us starts with the running game, our ability to be physical up front and move people and establish kind of the physical mentality that we want to play with. And then off of that, Russ is obviously just having a terrific year. He's really, in year two of us being together, he's really just kind of mastered what we're trying to get done. His ability to hit the big plays and throw the ball deep down the field is really been just at a really, really high level. So he's playing great. When the run game's firing, we're really, really hard to deal with. And, you know, just so much of it, when we get these loaded boxes to stop the run, it gives him the ability to kind of work his one-on-one matchups on the outside. And we've got some really talented skill players as well. When you look at Tyler Lockett, you look at DK Metcalf, you know, got Josh Gordon, you know, a couple weeks back, getting him implemented. So we're very difficult to deal with when we're firing all cylinders and we've got that good balance.
You bring up Russell Wilson, and 2 years ago you took over as the Seahawks offensive coordinator. What did you envision Russell was like, and how does that compare to the reality of coaching him today?
You know, that's a great question. I didn't know much. I admired him from afar for the great, you know, player that he was. I think the first thing that jumped out at me was, you know, I didn't realize what a talented passer he was. I think, you know, a lot of time Russ gets, you know, known for his cool plays that he makes when he improvises and moves around and gets on the edge and makes things happen, kind of those wild plays. But the guy's a terrific passer. I mean, he's got unbelievable arm talent. But what I've been probably blown away the most with Adam is his preparation, work ethic during the week. I'm talking in terms of the way he studies film, the way he takes care of his body. He puts together maybe one of the coolest things I've ever seen a player do. He puts together a scouting report, really all by himself, that covers first, second, third down, personnel, coaches, D coordinator, and he puts it together early in the week and he gives it to the players. And when I tell you, it rivals any scouting report that we've ever done. We certainly do one as well, but it's unbelievable. I mean, he does an amazing job. There's just countless hours. So he is a perfectionist. His work ethic is top notch. He takes care of his body, and he blew me away with that.
Have you had other quarterbacks who have produced their own scouting reports on the upcoming opponent?
No, I mean, everybody, look, you have to be a diligent worker. You got to prepare. I mean, everybody's a little bit different. You know, I remember when I was with Favre, I mean, he would watch all kinds of film and stuff, but Russ is the first guy that's ever actually taken the time to type it up, put it on paper, hand it out, share it to the players. It's just really cool to see him take ownership in this thing. And, it shows the rest of the unit that, hey, our quarterback, our field general, he's prepared and he's ready to go.
And it's unbelievable that he does that. He does it all himself, Brian? Like, is there anybody, are there like Santa helpers that help him along the way?
Well, I'm sure he has some people that do some things for him on the side, but it's mostly him. I mean, it's almost all exclusively him. And, it's done by Tuesday at, normally around 2 or 3 o'clock. And, it's very impressive, document.
Now, you brought up Brett Favre, so you've had the chance to coach Russell Wilson and Brett Favre and some other great quarterbacks. Where you've been, you've worked under Pete Carroll, Jeff Fisher, Rex Ryan. That's an extensive list of coaches. And like I said, you got to Seattle 2 years ago. What would you say you've learned most from your time with Pete Carroll?
I would say number one is Pete's just amazing in terms of how he invests in people. I remember when I first got here, you know, really excited about the opportunity, and Pete, you know, kind of called me into his office, and I thought we were getting ready to talk philosophy of football and things like that. And he wanted to really talk about, hey, what's your personal philosophy, asking me, and just really helping me figure out what do I truly believe in. And he kind of took me through his process when, you know, he had to sit out for a year when he was, you know, fired with the Jets or the Patriots, and how he really kind of found himself. And I just thought that was really, really cool in terms of how he wanted to invest in me and say, okay, let's get a really clear vision of what you truly believe in and what you believe in, not just as a football coach, but as a man. And so I remember thinking, wow, that's really awesome that he took the time to invest in me. And that's been an ongoing process that's been really a lot of fun. The second thing I think that jumps out at me, Adam, is he and John Schneider have built just an amazing culture here. I mean, I've been around the game my whole life, obviously with a dad that was a head coach. I've been around the game my whole life. But the culture here is just a culture that people are excited to be a part of. It's positive. It's energetic. And it's really modeled upon being selfless in terms of we all want to try to be the best version of ourselves, but how do you also help your teammates and your fellow coaches become the best versions of themselves? So the culture here in Seattle is amazing. And again, it's not just Pete by himself. He and John work so well together, but it's a special organization. And I've learned a lot about how important that culture and the environment is when you come into this building every day.
Have you not encountered cultures like that in previous stops, Brian?
No, sure. Each culture is its own. I think this is the one that I think that I really believe in, just because I see how it's all about people being themselves. You know, we're not going to make Russell Wilson fit into a box. Hey, Russ, go be you. But make sure you're preparing yourself to be the best version of yourself. And, hey, also go help DK Metcalf, a young player, be himself. So, you know, each organization is different. I took a ton of things from my father. I took a ton of things from Dick Vermeil, Rex Ryan, guys like that I've been under, Jeff Fisher. But this organization, the relationship between John and Pete, that head coach to GM relationship is such a special one that it's hard to beat Seattle.
You bring up all these things that you've learned, the culture. How much better off do you think you are now in terms of potentially becoming a head coach one day, whether that's this year, next year, the year after, whenever that may be, compared to when you got this job in Seattle?
Oh, I'd say I've grown tremendously. It wasn't just these past 2 years. I mean, these past 2 years have been amazing under Pete, and he's so open and so willing to share his thoughts and his ideas, but also to challenge me on, okay, do you really believe that, or is that just kind of a game plan thought this week? So that's been terrific. But actually, you know, the 2 years when I was not a coordinator and I was in Indianapolis coaching the quarterbacks, Adam, I had a chance to kind of reflect when you're kind of sitting in a different chair and just kind of looking back over my other stints as a coordinator. And I've learned so much just by kind of those, I call them, you know, lessons learned as a leader, the things looking back. And so between that time and then coming here with Pete, I just thought it was a really, really great learning experience for me. And there's no question that now, whenever that opportunity comes and arises, which I hope is in the next little bit, that I'm way more prepared of what I believe in and how I want the organization to be built and how I want the relationship to be between myself and the general manager and how I want the club to look. And a big part of that is Pete and the way he's invested in me.
So what would that be? So you get your own organization one day. What does that look like with Brian Schottenheimer leading the way?
Well, it's going to start with people. It's certainly going to start with people. I believe you win with people. And not only do you win with people, but you win with you enjoy the journey more. You enjoy the process more by having great people around you. I think there's got to be a work ethic. I mean, if you watch the way we practice here in Seattle, the tempo that we go at is it's just different. I mean, we're on the field. We're not on the field long. We're working hard. Guys are moving from drill to drill. That work ethic and the importance of practice is very evident. I think obviously you need to have build a terrific staff. I think that's really, really important. And then the relationships that are built throughout the building are so critical. And I'm talking from top to bottom, how you work the relationship between yourself and the other coaches and the players and the salary cap guys. I think relationships are critically important to me just because I believe, like I said, you win with people.
You brought up your time in Indianapolis, the couple of years you spent there as the quarterback's coach with them. How much did the Andrew Luck news surprise you, and what was your reaction to that?
I was surprised. You know, just because he's such a terrific player, such a great person. I didn't feel sorry for Andrew. I felt sorry kind of for the NFL just because he's such a terrific talent and such an amazing person. But reached out to him, and again, I know he's at peace. And so because he's at peace and I care about him, then I'm thrilled for he and Nicole.
Do you think that one day we will see him again in the NFL, or do you think that he's moved on?
You know, I don't really know that. I think, you know, that's something I haven't really thought about. I think, you know, Andrew doesn't do anything without thinking it clearly and being methodical in his approach. So I think he's probably at peace with his decision, and maybe we'll see him coaching at some point.
Now, you brought up your dad. And for those who don't know, your father, Marty, was a longtime NFL coach, 21 seasons in the NFL. Wondering how he's doing right now and what you could tell us about his condition.
Well, I really appreciate you asking. The Alzheimer's has gotten a little bit worse. Within the past, I'd say, month or so, we had to move him to a memory care center in Charlotte, which is where they live. I'm really excited because that's actually been kind of weird, Adam, not having him around at games. I'm used to having him at almost all of my games, and he obviously has not made any this year, but I'll see him this week. And so for the people that love him and adore him, which is many, I can't tell you how many people come up to me before games and just say, hey, we're thinking about your dad, or hey, your dad's one of the best that's ever done it. That still makes me emotional and makes me feel so honored to be his son. But I can't wait to see him and put my arms around him this weekend when we get to Charlotte. It's going to be great to do that. It's been quite a while since the summer, I guess, since I last saw him.
So he is in the Charlotte area right now, correct?
He is, yep. That's where they live, yep.
And will he be going to the game this weekend?
No, he won't go to the game. He went to the game last year. We played in Carolina last year. He went to the game, but it's just it's a little bit harder for him to move around now. He doesn't move quite as quick as he used to, although he can still play golf from time to time, hit balls. But he will not go to the game, but he'll come by the hotel, and he and I'll get a chance to spend some quiet time together.
So this is the first year in which he has not gone to your games.
Yeah, and it's really weird, you know, because I'm used to getting into the car after a game and big wins and tough losses and having kind of that sounding board, the guy that's been there, you know, and he's always great. You know, he's always been great about letting me kind of vent about, hey, this happened or that happened, or hey, that was great, you see this. And then he'd always pull the stats out. And I love driving home. I've got that memory ingrained in my brain of he and I driving home and being like, hey, Dad, tell me what we did on third down. Hey, Dad, tell me what we did time of possession. And then he'd of course, talk about field position. And I just, you know, I miss that. And unfortunately, he's not at that point right now. But, again, I'm thrilled about seeing him. But it is a weird feeling to not have him at these games. I sure do miss having him around.
Of all the time that you spend with him, of all the things you learn from him, what's the one thing that stands out, Brian?
Just what a great teacher he was. He truly, truly loved coaching. He loved imparting wisdom on players and trying to help them become the best that they could become. I just think that he did it at an amazing level, and he truly cared about people, cared about them, and did it with such humility that I have so much respect for what he was able to accomplish. And his legacy is not about his 200 wins. His legacy is not about the fact he never won a Super Bowl. His legacy is about the people that he affected along the way. And believe me, I get to hear it on almost every Sunday in an opposing stadium or at our stadium, the people that love and adore him.
Well, he was an unbelievable coach. Is that hard for you to try to follow along by, or are you honored with all those words that you hear about him?
You know, when I first got into the business, Adam, I think, you know, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, like, you know, I have to, you know, make my own name. But now that I've kind of developed, you know, a name for myself, and he's, you know, a little bit far removed, I've always been proud of him. I've always been proud of what he's accomplished. And, when I worked for him, I learned a ton from him. I mean, he's a big part of what I believe in, you know, how you teach and how you be demanding and how you, you know, start with fundamentals and how that's going to separate the difference between two evenly matched players and how the one with the better foundation of fundamentals is going to win the long haul of the battle of the game. So there's not a day that doesn't go by that I use things that I picked up from him along the way when I was either watching him coach or coaching alongside him.
Hey, Brian, I appreciate taking the time today. Enjoy your visit with your father this weekend, and lots of luck on Sunday against the Panthers and the rest of the season as well.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate it.
Cap hit.
All right, let's bring in the ESPN analytics guru, my friend, the statistician, Evan Kaplan. Evan, we got week 15 upon us. Big week in the NFL. Let's sort out the playoff picture to start it out.
Yeah, let's do it, Adam. So 3 weeks to go. Let's start with the AFC. And as you look at the playoff picture and you talk about the Ravens, and they certainly have home field advantage in their sights. They have a game lead on the Patriots, but they really have a game and a half lead because they have the tiebreaker on New England. And as poorly as the Patriots have played lately, they are still the only other team besides the Ravens in the AFC with three losses. So the Chiefs have the tiebreaker over New England, but if the Patriots win out against the Bengals, the Bills, and the Dolphins, they'll still have home field, which, as we've talked about, that's critical to their postseason success. So at the top of the AFC, it's those teams. And then the situation that I think has really become interesting over the last few weeks is the AFC South. And you talk about the Texans, who are 8-5, and now the Titans are 8-5, and a really cool scheduling quirk that they will play twice over the final 3 weeks of the season.
Oh, those two teams, you mean, the Titans and
Texans. Titans and the Texans, exactly. So the Texans currently are in the AFC South spot and the four seed behind the Chiefs, but they still play the Titans twice. So they could shift around. We could be sitting here next week and the Texans could be on the outside looking in. They could have a one-game lead on the Titans. That's what makes that part interesting. The Bills are in the driver's seat for the first wild card. I don't know what you think about that Texans-Titans, how that's going to shake out. The teams, the Texans, we don't know, feels like what we're going to get with them every week.
They're schizophrenic.
They are.
I mean, it is unbelievable. They could go out and beat the Patriots and then go out and get blown out by the Broncos. Like, what is that?
It's hard to know what to make of it. And then when you talk about Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill is playing some of the best quarterback play that we've seen in the league right now. In terms of currently, you look at the QBs around the league, and he's been playing well. I'm not sure how – I don't know what you think in terms of which of those teams has a better chance to go further in the playoffs and then would benefit from having that home game in the wild card round.
And Ryan Tannehill, that guy's been unbelievable. To watch that?
He has. 6-1 as a starter and unrestricted free agent who, whether it's from the Titans or someone else, he seems like he's going to get a nice contract this offseason.
Oh, and he deserved it. He's been playing great. All right, let's go into some of the matchups this weekend. We've got Tom Brady and Drew Brees both chasing Peyton Manning's all-time touchdown record. Give me an assessment of how this is going to play out here, Evan.
This is really fun. So we came into the season with both of them about 20 away from tying Peyton's record of 539 career touchdown passes. And as they've moved throughout the season, Brees missed some time with the injury, and Brady, we've talked about his struggles, but as we go into week 15, the Patriots will play the Bengals Sunday, then the Saints will play the Colts Monday night. Tom Brady, three touchdown passes away from tying Peyton Manning. He's got 536. Drew Brees has 537. He's two away from tying Manning. So really a fun thing for our listeners out there to keep an eye on this weekend. We'll see how many Brady throws on Sunday. And then that would be, I think, just as a football fan, someone who loves the history of the game, that would be really cool if, let's say, Brady throws three on Sunday to tie Manning, and then maybe Brees throws three on Monday to move ahead of Manning. I think that would be just kind of a cool thing outside of the game results to keep an eye on this weekend.
And then we also have an interesting matchup between the Cowboys and Rams, Jared Goff versus Dak Prescott. What do we make of that?
Well, look, this is the third time that these two quarterbacks will meet in their NFL careers, including the playoffs, and they were both drafted in 2016. Goff, first overall pick, Dak back in the fourth round. The Rams have won the first two matchups, and this is a game where you've got the Cowboys, who are still in first place in the NFC East at 6-7. They have the tiebreaker over the Eagles, and the Eagles, with all the injuries they've had, I went back and went through just going by the talent that the Cowboys have in their roster. They have the most Pro Bowl, most players on their roster who have previously been selected to a Pro Bowl in their career. Those players have combined for the most Pro Bowls of any one roster in the NFL. It almost feels like this is a game where if the Cowboys lose this game and then they lose to the Eagles in week 16, it looks like they're on the outside looking in. So this is a game where – but the Rams have been playing well. This is one where it feels like you don't want to call it a must-win because it's not, with the Eagles also 6-7. It feels like one that the Cowboys have to win, but it's not going to be easy. This Rams team, as we've seen the last few weeks, Adam, has turned it on. They've gotten Todd Gurley going, and in turn, that has gotten Jared Goff going in the play-action game.
Now, the Rams have been playing their best football of the year, but they're going to have to win out. It may be a little late for them to do this right now. And the Cowboys, look, they're going to have to win out, too. And the Eagles, that's the great part of mid-December, right? We've got 3 weeks left. Everyone's season's on the line. Some teams are going to step up. Some teams are not. And the ones that do, move on. And the ones that don't, go home.
And the fun part, too, as we kind of circle back to where we started here and go to the NFC playoff picture quickly, you've got a lot of these teams playing each other. Rams, Cowboys. You got the Packers and the Bears who still have a shot on the outside looking in. The Vikings and Packers play on Monday Night Football in Week 16. Week 17, Seahawks, 49ers. So that's always the good part as we come down with the playoff races that, especially I like the inter-division matchups like you'll get this week with Rams Cowboys, where it's not necessarily going to impact that one division, but you've got so many different things coming off of one game.
Not a lot of great matchups this weekend.
No, it's an interesting week, but I feel like sometimes when it doesn't have when the schedule doesn't look great on paper, we end up having some classic games back and forth, and but this feels like one where it's not as much preview in terms of looking ahead at the great matchups,
right?
But there will be a ton of fallout. Sunday night into Monday will be a ton of, okay, who was able to hold serve or who maybe slipped up, and how we look at the playoff picture over the final 2 weeks after Sunday.
Look, last weekend we had the Bills and the Ravens. We had the 49ers and the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Patriots and the Chiefs.
Yep.
Some great matchups. And this weekend, I think the thing that is most interesting to me might be that it's the last game in Oakland. Like,
I agree.
That's not a matchup. That's a team going in there and the Raiders playing their last home game.
Yeah, that's a good one to keep an eye on. Yeah, there's a couple of those little matchups that, look, you've got, I mean, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, the two Oklahoma Heisman winners, if that interests you. There's those little things like that. I agree with you on the black hole. That will be a really great scene, an emotional scene, certainly, on Sunday afternoon. But yeah, the real kind of big games, if you look at interdivisional games, you got the Bears and the Packers.
Great game.
And then I think that AFC South game is the Texans and the Titans.
That's
which
a great game too.
It is. But yeah, like you said, in terms of teams really at the top of the league, we don't have the depth of matchups that we had in week 14, but I think we're going to have a good week of football, Adam.
Let's hope you're right, Evan. Appreciate the time today. We'll see you, I guess, in New Orleans for the Monday night game, Colts and Saints. And thanks for the time today, Evan.
All right. Thank you, Adam.
And so there is the ESPN analytics guru, Evan Kaplan. Special thanks to him, and special thanks to the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, who has his offense ranked fifth in the league going into Sunday's big game against the Carolina Panthers, and should be an emotional weekend for Brian as he gets to see his father, Marty, who's battling Alzheimer's, and we certainly send Marty Schottenheimer and the Schottenheimer family our very best wishes. Special thanks also to the former Panthers head coach, Ron Rivera, and special thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in to another Adam Schefter podcast. Be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. This week, Mina chats with Dominique Foxworth about Week 15. Download and subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show right now and the Adam Schefter podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And until Week 16, enjoy Week 15, everybody. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.